Again, my name is Sony Tankersley. Thanks for staying for the last day of APHA. Saw a lot of folks with their bags yesterday. I was afraid we're going to have much of a turnout, but excited to have you here. I am going to be talking about engaging youth leaders in policy change and using community partners and what we call measures of progress to create that change. So my disclosure is that I do work with Rescue Social Change Group. I'm the Youth Engagement Group Manager there. And today my goal is just to talk about what we do and why we engage youth, why that's important. It's very much a passion of mine. And just to share with you a little bit about one of our campaigns so you can see how we engage youth and see what that might be relevant for you in your own programs. So why work with youth? So when I'm talking about youth, I'm talking mostly about high school teens. I know that word can be used for a wide range, but today we're going to talk about high school teens. Why engage youth? Well, because I've worked with youth and high school teens from all different backgrounds, all different parts of the country, I don't like the phrase at-risk youth, because what that does is assume that you've got the kids that are at risk, and then you've got a lot of kids that are not at risk. And because we've all in this room been a teenager, we all know that all teens are at risk for something. It's a time of growth, it's a time of independence, you're getting your driver's license, you're going on first dates, you are making decisions about what's going to happen after high school, social pressures, things like that come in. Those are things that kind of put you at risk. You're also, you know, bombarded by things in the media, body image, the recent Kim Kardashian picture that's been all over the place, things like that, cyberbullying, all these different things. So even your textbook story, storybook, you know, awesome kid that's doing, you know, going places, they're also at risk. So it's important for us to all realize and acknowledge that all youth are at risk. The next piece on here is one of my favorite quotes by Peter Benson. He was the former president of the Search Institute. He helped develop this 40 developmental assets, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. And actually, the title of one of his books is All Kids Are Our Kids. The responsibility of the generation of kids is not just for the parents or the teachers that interact with them, but everyone in this room and really everyone in our society. So it's important in our programs in public health or really whatever you do to engage youth in those programs. They're all our kids. And really, why not? It's a growing population of youth of our country. Often they don't have anything to do, so why not engage them in the programs? And as we've heard, you know, from the other presenters, they're creative, they're fun, they like to throw pies at people. You know, they like to do great things that really can bring the message of your program to a different audience and just make it something a lot more interactive and fun. So adolescent development, the brain continues to develop, you know, into our 20s, as we know, and it's a time of identity. You know, youth are trying to figure out, who am I? Who do I want to be? What do I want to stand for? What do I want to be known for? So it's a great time to kind of hone them into something like public health, like policy change in public health, and make it, you know, something that they can do for the rest of their lives. We talk about creating passion for activism. Teenagers have a lot of passion. Most of the time we call that drama, right? There's a lot of drama in teenagers' lives. If we hone that into something positive and something that can help us out, it's great. And we always say you create an activist as a teen, you have an activist for life because they learn how to fight for something, stand up for what they believe in. And if they're part of a process that helps them get there, then it's something that they might do, you know, and that's kind of the future of what we have, particularly in public health, is the youth now will be the leaders in the future. So recipients versus participants. This was a big point of contention in my grad school days. A lot of times programs for teens are just given to teens. They just receive a program. And kids don't like to be told what to do. You know, they don't want to walk in and this is what you do. That's what they get most of the time at school. You walk in, this is what we're studying, this is the book we're reading. They like to participate. They like to be part of that process. You want to provide meaningful roles for the youth. So even if you have your own agenda, even if, you know, this is what we're going to be working on, this is the campaign topic, you still want them to have some meaningful roles in that. You don't want them just stuffing envelopes or filing papers. They want to be part of the process. And a key piece, particularly in the beginning of working with a group of youth, is to set them up for success. Kids don't like to fail. No one likes to fail. But if they succeed in the beginning, they're going to be more bought into the program. So really creating and tailoring your program to where they're feeling success in the beginning, it helps them with that buy-in. I like to talk about the experiential learning model, which is really hands-on, intentional activities, and there's a bit of processing afterwards, talking to the teens afterwards. How did it go? How did you feel? What worked? What didn't work? What could we do better the next time? This is extremely important with policy change because, as we all know, sometimes policy change does not work. We do everything we can. We may be working on policy for a year, 2 years, 10 years, and it fails. And what we don't want is we don't want teens to get discouraged. We don't want them to give up and say, oh, all this work I did, you know, was for nothing. So implementing the experiential learning model to where along the way they're realizing that they're learning things along the way. So in the end, if the end result doesn't go the way we want, they still feel like they've accomplished something. obviously teens can't do this on their own, and one of the big misconceptions out there in the youth development world is that, you know, youth-led movements, you know, youth-led programs, well, that doesn't mean that you just tell kids, you know, go. So, you know, a lot of the programs that we work with are tobacco prevention work. So if we were to tell a group of teens, our goal is to reduce the teen tobacco use in the state of New Mexico, go. They don't know what to do. They need our help to help them figure it out. So the youth-adult partnerships are really important. A couple key pieces is to avoid cultural assumptions about youth. Give them respect. If you give them respect, most of the time you get respect. Combating things like adultism and tokenism. Adultism is simply, you know, favoring someone who's older over someone who's younger simply because they're older and may have more experience in something. Tokenism is basically the photo op. Having the youth pose with the congressman, isn't that great? You can slap it on your, you know, in your reports. That's fantastic, but teens see through that. And unless you've processed it and made that part of the experience and saying, look, you're going to pose with a congressman, it's kind of lame, but this is why you're doing it, you know, they're going to not feel, it's not authentic for them. And teens are all into being authentic. So avoiding as much as you can adultism and tokenism. You really want to engage and empower them. Again, that creativity, that excitement is there, and that is what I'm able to do with my job. So I manage programs around the country that empower high school teens to create social change in their schools and communities related mostly to tobacco and obesity prevention. And I do that through Rescue Social Change Group. We are a behavior change marketing firm, and we believe there are at least three different paths to behavior change, so knowledge change, policy change, and culture change. I work with policy change, and that model is called Evolvement. So that's what I'm going to be talking with you about. So, Evolvement is a national youth engagement movement. It focuses on empowering those high school teens to be agents of change in their communities. This kind of language is not what teens are used to hearing in school, you know? They're usually the ones, again, just sort of receiving the program, read this book, do this paper, you know, they're taught to the test, all that kind of stuff. So being an agent of change sounds really exciting, like a superhero. Our mission for Evolvement is not to make, mostly with Evolvement, we work with tobacco, so not to make tobacco use illegal or fight against tobacco users, to promote a world that rejects tobacco use by its own free will. Using words like that, teens get excited. Own free will, it's my choice, it's their choice. Someone's not telling you what to do. So with the Evolvement program, the model, we've trained more than 6,000 youth since 2009 on the model, another 1,800 by the end of 2014. This particular model has been implemented in New Mexico, in Clark County, Nevada, which is where Las Vegas is, in the city of Denver, Alberta, Canada, and it's also in the state of Virginia. In Virginia, it's called Y Street. So where do we find all these youth? There's tons of teenagers out there. How do you get them in your programs? And one thing that Evolvement does is we call it the partnership program. We partner with organizations that have high school students. So a lot of them are in high schools. High school clubs, like after-school program, you know, type clubs like Student Council or Key Club, something like that, or organizations in your community that have high school students, so maybe a YMCA Leaders Club or something like that. We do that because teens are already there. So rather than us going out in the community, holding up flags, holding up signs, you know, we want teens to come work with us, we go places where the teens typically are. Now, at the beginning of my presentation, I talked about how I don't like to use the term at-risk youth, right? All youth are at risk. Well, in Evolvement, we engage more of the low-risk population. So these are the kids that are staying after school to go to the Key Club meeting, or they're volunteering on the weekend with their, you know, community service organization or something. These are the low-risk populations. So with tobacco prevention, these are not the youth that are cutting class to go smoke a cig, right? We have Rescue has other models that we use for those type of high-risk behaviors, but with Evolvement, we're talking about the low-risk population. So we partner with organizations to help us find interested youth to be our activists for these different campaigns. And we have our structure with milestones. So typically our program has four milestones. The first milestone is the training, where we get a group of youth together, we train them on the topic. So again, with tobacco, we call it Tobacco 101. We go through some of the general statistics about, you know, tobacco use in our country and all those things. We also talk about social justice issues surrounding tobacco, so they know it's more than just a health issue. And then they do a training project, get their feet wet a little bit, learn what it's like to be an activist with our coordinator still close by to help train them. Then the second milestone is an event that the youth do in their school or community. I'll tell you more about events in a few minutes. The third and fourth milestones are these things called MOPs, measures of progress, that they'll go out and they'll collect or achieve in their schools or communities. All these milestones, basically the partnership organization is rewarded with some funding for it. So depending on our funding source, it could be, you know, each milestone could be $200, it could be $400. And that money, as it says at the bottom, it can be used however they want to. And this is awesome. It's like a no-strings-attached grant. They can use it for wherever they want to. So if you go back in time to high school, I'm sure all of us were in clubs that needed money, and you did fundraisers, right? You did bake sales, you did car washes, you did the stuff that was maybe fun, but probably not relevant unless it was a baking club or a car wash club. So we try to promote this program to clubs that will need the money. So like a key club or a community service organization maybe has a philanthropy need, or they go to a competition and they need to travel, or they have uniforms. Maybe it's a community-based organization, a faith-based group, like a church youth group, and they want money for a mission trip. So there's a purpose behind that. The money is definitely a driving force for some partner organizations. For others, they're just interested in this type of programming to have their youth participate in something that is meaningful, giving them leadership skills, communication skills, and something that, again, helps them be an activist in their community. So this is the basic model of involvement. We have campaigns, measures of progress, we call them MOPs, and then events and projects that the youth do. So let's explain a little bit about that. So campaigns. Like I mentioned before, if you tell a group of youth, go reduce teen tobacco use in New Mexico, you have 1 year. They don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. There are people, I'm sure that you've met at this conference, that have spent their entire career trying to figure out how to make that happen. You can't expect a group of teens to figure that out. So we create bite-sized little portions of that. We call them campaigns. They are short-term goals that support an overall long-term mission. So it's not unrelated. It's just one piece of it. It's tangible. It has some realistic outcomes in the time that a youth is involved. So typically with involvement, again, it's high school teens. They mightn't get involved as a freshman. They might get involved as a senior. Either way, you want to make sure their time that they spend is relevant, that they're giving some great input, and that it's tangible. We also want the campaigns to be easy for youth to understand, and we want them to be relevant. And this one can be a little tricky depending on our campaign topics. Sometimes our youth are heavily involved in creating the campaign. So we will go to, we call it like our leadership teams at our summits and say, okay, well, what do you want to work on? Other times our funding sources sort of tell us, this is what we want to work on. We want to work on tobacco retail ordinance, you know, in the city of Denver, go. And so making that relevant to youth is something that our staff does, and we work with the teens to make sure that they understand the relevancy factor in there. Because again, the teens, typically they're not 18 yet, they can't vote, you know, those types of things, and that's a lot of times why folks shy away from using them, because they're not relevant. But of course, we all know that they are relevant, and making the campaigns relevant gives them more of an incentive to participate. So these measures of progress, this is really the key to what we do, MOPs. They're actions that the public can take to contribute toward a campaign goal. It's something that's tangible and quantifiable indicators of progress. That's really important as well. It's something that can be counted. Why is that important? Well, for a campaign, you want to have there be measurable goals so that you can report back, this is what we did. Instead of just, we spent this much time at this rally, you want to actually say, we collected this many surveys or this many petition signatures. And for teens, this is really important because they want to be able to say what they did to help out. So going back to kind of the experience of being a freshman or being a senior, within the given life of a campaign, what did they do that was relevant? We would like them to be able to say, I worked on the distasteful campaign when I was in high school, and it was about telling the FDA that they should ban flavored tobacco products. And for that campaign, I collected 30 surveys, and I collected 15 support cards that we sent to the FDA. That's a lot more meaningful than just saying, I was in the Earth Club and we picked up trash, which is what I did when I was in high school. So giving them something that's more quantifiable, making them feel like even they're small, they're 15 support cards, and we sent the FDA 5,000, it's still the 15 that they collected from their friends, their neighbors, their community. That's relevant for them. And the examples, again, include surveys, photo pledges, Facebook likes, things that you can count. So they do this by projects and events. They'll go in their community, they'll lead individual projects, so they'll talk to their family members. Thanksgiving is coming up next week. Lots of kids working on projects. They're going to go talk to everyone in their family about the campaigns. That's great. Going to their neighborhood, you know, pools in the summertime, talking to folks there. That's awesome. Events are, of course, super popular. Events are basically projects with a lot of kids together. So events, they can piggyback on things already going on in their community, maybe a fall festival, a farmer's market, or they can plan their own. And we've had some really creative projects and events around the country with our various involvement groups. In Virginia, we had a group of youth who was working on a campaign about physical education in schools, and they decided to create a Quidditch tournament. And so there was all these kids running around with the brooms and all that. I'm not as familiar with Quidditch, but, you know, really creative, got the youth engaged, got the community engaged in what they were doing. There was a tie-in to that campaign. We had another, we've had this several times in different places around the country, folks doing a student-teacher basketball game and having, you know, of course everyone wants to see, you know, who's going to win, tying it into the tobacco statistics. How many youth in your state are using tobacco? How many adults in your state are using tobacco? Because we know that the tobacco industry wants that number of youth to be greater than that number of adults with the whole replacement smokers concept. So really tying in what they're doing into the actual campaign to make it relevant not only for the youth participating, but for the community as well. And it's fun. So again, this is evolvement model. We have our campaigns with our different measures of progress that are achieved through events and projects. So a couple examples of youth policy change campaigns that I've had the opportunity to work on. ACT OUT was the one I mentioned with the Quidditch tournament. It was about basically engaging people to support physical education in elementary and middle schools. That was in the state of Virginia. Flavor Fraud and Distasteful were both about flavored tobacco. We have License to Sell Tobacco was about this tobacco retail license ordinance in the city of Denver. And then 24/7 is what I'll quickly run through just to give you a little bit of an idea of what this actually looks like on the ground. So 24/7 is about tobacco-free schools. We found that schools have some kind of a policy on tobacco at their schools, but it's not as comprehensive. So it might just be for students, or it might be just during school hours. It might just be for smoking and not dipping and chewing and all that other stuff. And now, of course, with e-cigs, all schools should be revamping their policies to include that. That's 24/7. So we always go to youth with what's the problem. You know, we don't want to just say, hey, we're working on 24/7. Here's your survey. Go do it. You want to teach them about the topic. You want this to be a learning experience. So the problem, of course, is that school's where you go to learn. And if you see your teacher smoking, what does that do? What are you learning? They shouldn't be learning negative behaviors in school. The solution is, of course, to make a truly tobacco-free school 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This can come from different things like compliance. So maybe you have a good policy at your school, but there's not really good something with compliance. Providing cessation services for teachers and for students who smoke. You know, things like that can happen to make this a more comprehensive policy. We talk to kids about key decision makers. Who are these? We call them the KDMs. Who are the key decision makers? Who is going to help you pass this policy? And, of course, for this is school boards and school principals for this particular campaign. Then we talk about our target audience. Who is it that is going to influence these key decision makers? And with this campaign, of course, it's anyone who's related to the school. The students, the teachers, the parents, the administrators themselves, those are the ones that the school boards and the principals are going to want to hear from. Then we talk to youth about the strategy. Again, we're involving them in the whole process. Even if we've created a bit of the process on our own, we still want to involve them in what it's going to be. How are we going to reach our goals? Work with them on that. We give them a strategy overview. So we want truly tobacco-free schools. What does that look like? This is a step that a lot of programs don't do with youth because they think they either can't handle it, it's not relevant for them, they don't care. The teens want to know, what is this going to be about? What's the strategy for this? And they want to be able to understand the big picture. So our step one with the program is gathering information. So right now in Virginia, our youth are conducting a survey just to find out what do folks know about their tobacco policies in their schools. Have they seen people using e-cigs? Have they seen people using, using chew tobacco, things like that. And then we've, of course, talked to the kids about how to administer surveys. So it's not just like, hey, fill this out. We want this to be a whole process. So, you know, we teach them some of the facts, like 90% of adult smokers started smoking before they turned 18. We talk about unbiased surveys, you know, making sure that you don't tell somebody too much about the topic before they take the survey, things like that. We're really teaching them a process. After we get the survey results back, we create reports, and then we go through the rest of our strategy with the youth. So there'll be evidence of public support with support cards, principal meetings, school board meetings, and then, of course, social media. So during trainings, we always have the kids, okay, everyone take out your phone, because they always want to take out their phone, and let's go to these sites. Let's learn about social media, how to use it for more than just updating your status and posting a picture of what you're eating, right? How can you use social media for activism? So these are some of our sites here for our campaign, our 24/7 campaign in Virginia. So then we always talk about the campaign timeline. Whether you're a senior or whether you're a freshman, you want to know, how does my work count? Why is this mattering? So, you know, if you're a freshman, you can see all the way through the spring of 2016, there's a plan. I can stay involved that whole time. If you're a senior, you see, oh, well, it's just going to happen in the fall and the spring, but then that work that you're doing is going to continue. They want to leave a legacy, and it's important for them to know that. Obviously, we like to have presentations to other key decision makers. So real quick, we've got presentations at FDA. We've got some youth with the First Lady of Virginia. We have some youth with a city council member in Denver, and then some youth meeting with the Cabinet Secretary of Health in New Mexico. We want to, again, not make this tokenism. They're having real conversations. They're partnering with these folks to, you know, continue with their work on the topics of their campaigns. Through their efforts and involvement, the youth are able to strengthen policies, but more important for people like me who are really into youth engagement, they're learning the soft skills that they don't learn in school. They're learning communication skills, public speaking. They're learning about how to be an activist, leadership, community service. And for us, they're doing that all with involvement while promoting a tobacco-free world. So, sorry, the end of that was really rushed. This involvement, I know at the end we'll have questions, so I'm happy to take your questions and clarify anything or give you more information. Thanks.